This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Julian Ng, Tan Chung Han, and myself, Sharaj Kushan, back with the top business stories of the day. We're going to start with the private consumption issue. It's facing headwinds in Malaysia. And is it a result of inflation, weakening ringgit, or just a question of consumer sentiment?
Now, this is important, and this may be a cause of concern when you consider how domestic consumption or private sector spending, private consumption, those are seen to be the major drivers for economic growth for Malaysia. You know, it has been the case over the last couple of years in light of the overall slowdown in the global economy. So we are basically having to rely on ourselves, But when you see these kind of headlines on private consumption to face headwinds, then that causes concerns, given that these are our main engines for growth.
I think you just want to avoid a kind of inflationary spiral. Right now, if any of you are going back to ask your boss for a raise because you complain or you cry foul about rising cost of living, which I don't blame you for. I think it's true. Cost of living rise is really palpable. So asking your boss for a raise and then your boss seeing that raise would raise prices of the goods he sells. And this will lead in some circumstances, virtual cycle, right, which you want to avoid.
Or a vicious cycle. Julian, it's also one possibility, which is that he raises wages, but he doesn't raise the price of goods. Basically, he takes a hit on his profit.
Why would he?
Profit margin. Because
he's a self-respecting capitalist. Why would he take a loss?
Well, in the name of national interest,
unless demand for his goods and services are inelastic and it's not going to be affected by his... increase in price, then he might have to actually, suck it up and say, well, okay, my bottom line's gone, my margins have lowered, but I have to go ahead with it.
Well, obviously for businesses, their agenda is to make as much money as possible. Now, where else, when it comes to perhaps alleviating the pressures on the people, then perhaps government policies obviously play a big role in it. But I think also ultimately, we ourselves as a people, we are economic agents. We can make our own spending choices, what kind of lifestyles or where we want to place our money. So I think there is a case to be made as
To an extent. I think for a lot of people, the fixed portion of the salary, there's no choice on that. They got to spend on that. They got to eat. They got to spend on transportation, and they got to spend on shelter. So that choice may be illusory below a certain level of salary. And now I think there are more headwinds coming into challenging the wallets of people. For example, these insurance policies that are going to be set up by the government to prepare for a rainy day, like when you're retrenched or when you get accident. I think they're going to tick some bit more out of your wallets, right?
Okay, now what I'm interested in, yes, that's one. You quote the economist Lee Heng Gui, who's the executive director of the Socioeconomic Research Center. He's saying, despite higher cash hand, as it says, despite BRIM and those kinds of, why isn't something like BRIM in fact having an impact on consumer sentiment? Because that's actually what it's there for. It's help you absorb the shock of GST, but also encourage you to spend money.
And therein lies the fundamental or at the heart of all economics, that's being choice, right? Because even though someone puts the money into your pockets, you can choose whether to spend it or not. Whether to spend it or not, right? But then at the same time, I think this issue also highlights the disparity or the gulf that is often seen between, say, the hard economic data versus sentiment on the ground. So, for example, for Malaysia's headline GDP growth, it's expected to see a faster growth this year, ranging between 4.3 to 4.8%. Last year, 4.2%. So you've got those kind of GDP numbers or economic data, but as you see from these headlines, private consumption to face headwinds. That feeds into the negative and perhaps more risk-off, more cautious sentiment that perhaps is being felt among Malaysians.
We also have a graph that we have looking at now that correlates employment index with the consumer sentiment index. Is consumer sentiment tracking this? Because from the graph, it looks like it's tracking the employment index. As the employment index falls, so does consumer sentiment.
Right, you know, and certainly, you know, because I mean, it's also the wealth factor ties into it, right? You know, you want to only spend when you feel wealthy, when you feel like your income revenue is not being threatened, right? So that feeds into sentiment as well. But perhaps I can contrast what Malaysia is facing versus what the US is facing. They are somewhat on the opposite. So, for example, you've got economic data out this week for everything from auto sales to the non-farm payrolls. That's the job data that's due out this Friday evening Malaysian time. That seems to be showing, you know, a bit of a, I mean, the growth is not as you know, high as people expect. Yet, when you look at the sentiment, not just among the investors, as evidenced by the, you know, with the Dow Jones and the various indices, but also when it comes to consumer sentiment, consumer confidence, business spending, that seems to be on the upward rise. So there's a disconnect there once again between fundamentals versus sentiment. Unfortunately, or I guess if I can use that word, unfortunately for Malaysia, that that gulf seems to be on the downside rather on the upside rather than probably seen in the States, huh?
Are we looking at the so-called animal spirits unleashed by the Trump win? Americans just much more bullish about the prospects of their future? Is that what's happening there with consumer spending? Consumer sentiment?
Well, I think that term is usually used for the stock market.
Only for the stock market?
Usually because it refers to the exuberance when people give their money away, right? Whether it's a gamble or it's an investment. You know, we wouldn't know that. And for businesses as well, when they put money into investments. But for the consumers, I go back to my belief that below a certain level of salary, you really don't have much choice but to really spend on your necessities. So I think that all this discussion about short-term economic growth and consumer sentiment is peripheral to the whole idea of whether the government can support its nation with the correct policy, how cleverly we're spending our budget, how are we eradicating corruption to mine the budgetary pie for more money for social programs.
Now, that's at the individual level, you know, but something that we can look forward to in the very near future at noon today. We're expecting February external trade figures from the Department of Statistics. Both exports and imports are expected to rise on year for February by double digits. So when you see the kind of growth, you know, then you question, okay, again, fundamentals versus what we as Malaysians face.
Okay. E-hailing services such as Uber and GrabCar are one step closer to being fully legitimate after Putrajaya tabled an amendment yesterday to the Commercial Vehicles Licensing Board Act. Under the proposed amendments, drivers must now apply for a commercial license to carry passengers. Is this just more red tape that's going to hold down this this new kind of way?
I hope not. I think that's a good question. This is a good, valid question. In the parlance of the WTO or the World Trade Organization, while you remove actual trade barriers, tariffs and so on, there are non-trade barriers, non-tariff barriers. And I hope this new licensing regime would not put some red herrings in the form of innovation in the digital economy. I mean, people have been using Uber and Grab for a long time now, and there is a kind of self-regulation that's going on within this usage. Also, there are thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, and thou shalt not steal laws existing already, that should already keep that enforcement quite buoyant.
But, you know, again, in an ideal world, you would think that, you know, all the various industries and stakeholders that are already involved in the a ride-sharing space there, you know, that they will be able to self-regulate. That's the ideal, you know, and I would like to think that we as Malaysians, we can do that. But perhaps another way of looking at this legislation would be that the authorities are trying to preempt any potential liabilities, you know. So if, you know, In the negative instance whereby a tragic and fatal accident happens, then question mark, like, the who is to blame? Where does the line of where do you draw the line
as to who is
responsible?
Existing laws would say that the wrongdoer is to blame, right?
Right.
You don't need a license to prove that. But I'm just saying that the signal that is being sent out by the government is to admit that the old taxiing system is a bad, inefficient one, and that licensing regime must also send the signal that Uber and Grab are are very useful apps that people like to use, and they find a lot of efficiency in using those apps.
Sure. Well, we have some details on this, including the fact that license can must be renewed and cannot be transferred. We also have that that if you're caught without a driving such a license, right, to ferry passengers, you face a fine of ½ a million ringgit or 2 years jail. That's extraordinary.
That's
½ a million ringgit.
It is. But again, at the same time, it's not like the government is saying, Uber and Grab are bad. No. In fact, the Prime Minister in tabling budget 2017 gave a big shout out to Uber, right? Encouraging the B40 to perhaps use that as a job. Whether that's viable, that's a whole discussion for a whole nother day. But essentially, I go back to this instances whereby, when we have those express bus crashes on the highway, right? Very often, amidst the public outcry, people start pointing fingers, and it'll be, I would like to think that they are just able to point that finger just to the bus driver alone. But no, they then
extend. I don't see how a license can stop that.
This is a
question of mindset and attitude.
Wait, but it's the liability, right? Then very often is, why didn't government regulate them better? Why didn't they enforce those regulations better? So I think having those regulations in place then draws those parameters a lot more distinctly as to where the liability starts and ends.
Well, we'll be back very soon, as coming up is the news, and we're going to have, after that, the opening numbers on the stock market, more analysis. If you have any views, you can always also tweet us or text us. But all that in good time. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.